Moncrief on News Talk.
Welcome to another edition of Between Two Ferns. I'm your host, Zach Galifianakis, and my guest today is Hillary Clinton. Thank you very much, Mrs. Clinton, for being here. Critics have questioned some of your decision-making recently, and by you doing this show, I hope it finally lays that to rest.
Oh, I think it absolutely proves our case, don't you?
Are you excited to be the first girl president?
Well, I mean, being president would be such an extraordinary honor and responsibility. But being the first woman elected president and what that would mean for our country, and particularly what that would mean for, you know, not just little girls, little boys, too, that's pretty special.
Mm-hmm. Not to take away from the historic significance of you perhaps becoming the first female president, but for a younger generation, you will also become their first white president, and that's pretty neat too. As secretary, how many words per minute could you type? And how does President Obama like his coffee? Like himself? Weak?
You know, Zach, those are really out of date questions. You need to get out more.
What happens if you become pregnant? Are we going to be stuck with Tim Kaine for 9 months? How does this work?
That was Zach Galifianakis there interviewing Hillary Clinton in 2016 when she was running for president. As you may know, she's going to be testifying before Congress about the Epstein files within the next hour or so. So that should be interesting. We have Barbara and Declan, though, in the studio.
We're testifying.
Who could probably solve any problem she has for her.
She should write to us.
If only she'd ask.
She should have asked. We would have been happy to.
It could be in the mailbag, though, because it takes us ages to get through everything.
I mean, there's the first question here is about someone having an affair. So that's probably something she's experienced.
I would
have thought, you know, in close proximity, at least. Anyway, this person says, I found out about a year ago that my wife had an affair with a work colleague. The affair took place in work and never outside, as they were alone for long periods in the workplace, and keeping it in work allowed them to hide it well. It lasted about 3 years. It's over for more than 10 years, but they still worked together for many years after. Even after she left, they remained in occasional contact. I asked a lot of questions that got answers that mainly made him out to be a manipulator, but I'm finally accepting that liars lie and everything she did was by choice. After fighting with my brain, which was making out that only the other guy was at fault, I spoke to him once for whatever reason. At the end, he claimed a Garda friend advised him to tell me never to contact him or his wife again, as it would be viewed as threatening behaviour. I know that's nonsense, and for me, it was a one-and-done conversation. I felt he was probably recording the call, and he was waiting for me to threaten him, which I didn't. So I'm about to start to move on, but since I found out he now works near me or uses my local shop occasionally, it's antagonising me. I know the pain this caused me, but I've convinced myself that I need to tell his wife about it, even though it might make her feel as bad as I do. Should she be told, or is it petty vengeance that will hurt the wrong person? I can't get telling her out of my head.
Oh, gosh. I had to read this a few times because what I missed the first time was the fact that I was thinking, hang on a minute, this took place 10 years ago. Mm. And it lasted 3 years, but it took place. But he only found out about it a year ago because the anger from the letter, I think, is really hot, red hot and palpable. To answer his question at the end, it would be very petty vengeance to go and tell the wife. I understand when you're very angry, you want to hurt somebody at something, you want to do damage somewhere. But it won't soften his hurt to hurt somebody else. And she is in the same position as he is, you know, that she would be as hurt as he is. And she's an innocent again in all of this. So, yeah, no, don't. I mean, that would be an awful thing to do. I mean, I don't know how he would manage to exercise his anger and get rid of his anger. Just in my limited experience of anger, it probably something that time will just burn it out a little bit. And at the moment,
he's bumping into this guy in Centre.
But you see, the other thing that was, again, I was like, I spoke to him once for whatever reason. And at the end of speaking to him, he claimed a Garda friend advised him never to contact him again. And then he said he was recording the call. So he rang him, presumably, to have it out with him, which again, you know, I'm not sure if that's that helpful either. Basically, what I'm trying to say is what he needs to concentrate on. And I understand that it might be still, when it's only a year, it might be still early days to do this. What he needs to try and do is move beyond his anger and rebuild his relationship with his wife. His attention is all over the place in other places the guy she had the affair with his wife. What he needs to do now is focus on his relationship with his wife. They're presumably still together, so presumably he still loves her. Presumably he wants the marriage to continue. And that's where he should be focusing his attention, on rebuilding the trust and the relationship between him and his wife. And he has got to let go of his drive to kind of do some damage to your man, whether that be directly or whether that be through his wife. And I'm not sure how you do that except time. What do you think?
I'm just smiling at you because I'm just thinking about, like, you know, doing damage and revenge and just kind of blowing up somebody else's life because they blew up yours in that way. Seems, while you can label that as being petty vengeance or whatever, it also seems like a knee-jerk reaction of what you do, because it's just this kind of this rage. I also picked up on something when you were talking there, which is how confusing the letter is, how the story is told.
Yeah.
And if it's hard for me to get my head around what happened in that guy's relationship, I can imagine for him how hard it is for him to understand. Because really at the core of what's going on here is there's a betrayal, which, as you've said, the guy hasn't processed properly. He's trying to work out what's happening. In trying to understand what's happening, he has done what I think I would do, which is kind of go on a fact-finding mission to try to work out what actually happened. Because in the face of being betrayed by the person in the relationship with you, you can no longer really trust their version of what actually happened.
Yeah, okay.
And he alludes to that in the letter where he kind of goes, she's making it, oh, be such a manipulator. Before I knew it, he had me in the photocopy room. You know, no. People make their own decisions and they do those things, you know, because they wanted to. I know there are instances where probably there are manipulators and all that. But in this instance, I think that's what was going on there, that she chose to have a work kind of fling, is telling him that, you know, her version of what that is. Mm. And he's finding a little bit of skepticism around that. And he wants to talk to the guy. The guy gets the call from the guy, the husband of the woman he's having an affair with. His spoofing around the Garda thing and don't come near me and all this is all to do with ring fence and don't come near my wife.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the wife to find out about the deal. I don't know what the wife knows, but it sounds to me like that's what his main objective was, is to get the angry husband away from me in any way I can, with whatever nonsense I can say, so that my wife doesn't find out. So what this guy also, that the guy who was betrayed, is also coping with is a kind of a disempowerment in his relationship. It's like the whole, because the trust has been eviscerated by his wife's behavior, he's trying to fix that inside the relationship, but everything's all out of balance and he's trying to work out, he's trying to find a way to kind of almost gouge the rage out of him.
That's exactly it.
And he can't do that because what he was kind of thinking, he was okay. And then he sees your man, you know, at the bananas in Centra, and he's going, there's that guy. I want to make him feel how I, as an individual, feel. And I think that's a normal reaction. But I think what he needs to do maybe is to bottle his rage and realize the one thing that the guy has done has made him feel disempowered. And by him then pushing the nuclear button to destroy that guy's, you know, relationship by telling his wife, I think it's better held as a kind of a threat, like a nuclear arsenal, rather than blowing the bomb up. Know that he has that over that guy. Every time that that guy sees him in Centra, he's thinking, there's that guy who can tell my wife what I did.
He has to let all that go. He has to let, you know, his connection, in inverted commas, with the guy with whom the wife had the affair. He's got to let that go, and the wife. What I'm interested again,
I know,
is
you can just kind of, you know, clear that.
But
you know,
but like what you said, you know, his wife, although, as he says in the letter, and you referred to it, that liars lie and everything she did was by choice.
Yeah.
His anger is being focused on, not on his wife, on the guy she had the affair with.
Right.
And if he does believe liars lie and everything she did by choice, really he should be angry with her.
No, he's not. I'm talking about not the betrayal within the relationship. I'm talking about when you walk out into the street and you meet a randomer, like a man who is a stranger to you, but had the power to come in and disrupt you and make you feel shit about your own relationship.
But it was his wife who did that.
He did it too.
Yeah, he did it too, but it's his wife. He has no, like,
I think that's separate.
The other man has no loyalty to the husband. He had presumably a consensual affair with this man's wife.
Yeah.
I can understand how he is angry with him, but that's not going to do him any good because he can't actually expunge, if that's the right word, his anger on your man. But what he really should be doing is going back to his wife, with whom he should be the most angry, because she's the one who abandoned their vows, abandoned, you know, broke his trust, carried on this affair for 3 years. What I would like to know, and you mentioned the storytelling in the letter, what I would like to know is, he said he found out a year ago. Did the wife admit? Did she come?
Yeah,
with,
it's kind of implied, I think.
Yeah,
that somehow
was she sorry then that she had the affair and decided that she needed to tell him? And why did she decide she needed to tell him when it was 10 years ago?
I don't know.
Like,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of kind of like...
I'd love to know that too, but that's just for being nosy. Really,
no, but... And I wonder, is this what he said? Is she trying to get out of the marriage?
Oh.
Is that what he's sensing? And so he's kind of firing out, you know, at anybody who...
Yeah, I don't know. Because I got the sense that, like, somehow we found out. Maybe she told him. She told him, oh, no. And, you know, let's assume she's told him. And she's kind of going, no, he manipulated me into it to kind of spare his feelings to some degree. And then he maybe believes that for a while. And then he thinks, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was consensual. And I think he doesn't know what he wants to do at the moment because he's being pulled in so many different directions.
Yes.
He's so many feelings. It's easier to target the man with your
right.
anger.
Yes, exactly.
But maybe also on the table is his relationship with his wife over.
That's what I think he should be concentrating all his energies on. And I'm wondering why, if you, God forgive me, if you got away with it for 3 years, 10 years ago, why would she tell him now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, but. Look, if you want to take the concept that everything, airing everything out is best for everybody, you know, telling everybody the truth,
direction. It's not good.
No, I know.
It's never.
So therefore,
look, then again, it keeps us busy.
Yeah. Yeah. I do feel that
there is, regardless of whether you think it's this kind of patriarchal nonsense, there is a tendency to go, that's the bloke who had to go, my wife, I hate it.
Like the wife had nothing to do with it.
No, I know that. Like, I'm not saying it's like.
No, you said it's
correct.
Patriarchal, I get that.
I'm saying that there is a tendency towards that kind of thinking. And,
yes,
and
I agree.
And if that's the way the guy thinks, that's the way the guy thinks. And if he has that rage, and he managed to not have that rage when he wasn't seeing the guy around, but he's seeing the guy in Sandra.
Yeah.
Get that smirk off your face. I can get this. I'm saying
and
basically.
And yes, in the first paragraph, he's saying, liars lie. Everything she did was by choice. And after fighting with my brain, which is making out that only the other guy was at fault.
Yeah.
So he knows that she's at fault.
Yeah.
More from his perspective than the other guy is. But yet his anger is...
I'm guessing that you can work your way through that particular problem in the kind of, in a quiet, dark room with the counsellor and your wife. But when you're out in the real world and then you see the bloke.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the bit.
Yeah, and he's there with his wife and they're being all laughy and happy.
Like,
and you're going, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think it's a normal human reaction.
No, says, it is.
I want to blow that guy's life up. I'm saying that the funniest part of it and the bit where he can probably get the kind of the moral upper ground is to go, you're the one that's walking around with the power now, because the guy did the worst. He's already done his, that stranger man has already done the worst he can do to you and your wife in the relationship.
Yeah.
But you're now the guy, whatever you feel when you see him in Tesco or Centra or whatever, he sees you as the guy that can blow up his relationship.
Yes, true.
And you have that power over him. So don't be walking into that situation feeling disempowered, feeling like the kind of the wrong.
No, you have the
you
power.
Have huge power, and that power is something that you have. That's there.
And as long as you don't choose to use it.
I'm actually being kind of cheeky and funny in saying that the threat to use it is actually the power.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Absolutely.
But I hope he doesn't use it.
Yeah, if he sees him with the wife, go up and introduce yourself.
Yeah.
I've heard so much
you
about you.
You my wife.
You'd have to be. You'd have to be.
You'd have to be.
Really. There, a lot of commentary on this. Now, one person says his wife is clearing the air, a bit of honesty to have a clearer future.
Yeah.
So let's give her the benefit of the doubt that.
Yeah.
A lot of people saying that they've had similar experiences and, you know, therapy and or marriage counselling. Against that, an awful lot of people saying that the wife who doesn't know deserves to know.
You see, that's the other aspect.
But is there a difference between she deserves to know and he deserves to tell her?
Yes, there is a huge difference. But also, I mean,
that's true.
We've come up
against... How much fun would that be for him?
We've come up against this in lots of different contexts before where, you know, my best friend's husband's having an affair. Should I tell the best friend? Mm. I don't think it's ever your business to go wandering into other people's relationships when you don't know what exactly is going on. I think it's unless somebody's life is literally in danger, I just don't think wading into other people's relationships like that is a good idea.
Yeah. Somebody says, my ex-husband, we know what happened there, had an affair with a much younger woman who was our cleaner. Bizarrely, I never hated her or was really that bothered about her. Not sure why, but she wasn't anything to me, so couldn't hurt me. He was the one who owed me respect and loyalty.
So, is he famous?
I don't know. What, that he was...
Ringing a bell.
Gosh, okay.
Don't name names.
Don't name names.
The thoughts are coming to mind.
We'll be taking a break early today, just so we can find out. My boyfriend decided to give up cigarettes for Lent this year, which I genuinely admire. It's not easy, and I've told him I'm proud of him for trying. The problem is, I can't decide to give up smoking myself. Now he's upset me and says I should have joined him in quitting, that it would show support and make it easier for him. He's been quite irritable and keeps saying it's unfair that I'm still smoking while he's trying not to. He's driving me insane, walking around all high and mighty now after smoking for 15 years. We are saving to buy a house and he says the money we save on cigarettes can go towards a deposit. I understand where he's coming from, but I also don't feel ready to quit. I know he's struggling, but I also feel like this was his personal decision, not a joint one. Is it unreasonable that I haven't given up cigarettes too, or should I be doing this alongside him?
This is kind of funny. So, you know,
you're thinking everything is funny today.
No, it is funny because I go, you know, he quit cigarettes yesterday, whatever, you know, speak to me when he's off the cigarettes for 15 years. Look, I get this because, you know, clearly it's not unreasonable for her to be, to feel that his choices shouldn't end up being her choice.
Yeah.
That his decision to quit cigarettes or to do anything shouldn't automatically mean that it's her decision to do it as well. I think that the problem though is with cigarettes and other addictive types of behaviors and things is that when you're trying to bed down this new habit or this new way of being, it's the environment that you're in can make it really difficult. There are things that people around you can do to support you through your process. And the problem is that she's not seeing his kind of
struggle,
bad way of asking for help or his struggle as something about him. She is seeing it as being some kind of attack on her. Mm. And that's down to communication or understanding or whatever it is. But the reality of it is that without her help, he's not going to be able to manage to maintain his thing with cigarettes. Anybody who smokes cigarettes knows that people who've tried to give up cigarettes often try to give up cigarettes about 10 times because they fail. And people fail in stupid ways, but the most common way people fail is because somebody around them is smoking and they smell a cigarette, you know, and then you go, oh, give a bit of that or whatever. And that's, you know, so kind of trying to force your new worldview onto your surroundings is the safest, easiest way to protect you, to try to do your new, you know, and that's like no biscuits in this house. There's loads of ways that people do the same kind of thing. They kind of go, I'm on a diet, so you're not allowed to have X, Y, and Z in the house. And is that bad? Is that good? Is it whatever? Personally, I think in a relationship, you're both trying to create something together. You're not coming in going, I'm this and you're now going to have to be this, although some relationships do work like that. I think for this couple, if she has to recognize that what he's doing, as well as deciding a new way of being, he's also doing something that's positive for his health. And that she secretly knows that she wants to stop smoking, because most smokers don't want to smoke. They like to get on the high horse and go, I'll smoke, you know. But the reality of it is that every smoker knows smoking is unhealthy and it's not good for them. And in the long term, secretly in the back of their head, they're going to quit cigarettes when it suits them. But I'm not going to do it because you're making me or whatever.
Yeah.
That's all part of the excuse. That's the little part of the excuse in your head going, whatever. So for me, I think it boils down to her recognizing what his struggles are and his way of being, you know, successful in quitting up cigarettes is also triggering her on some level.
Yes, well.
It's not just about autonomy. Yeah. It's about all that stuff around cigarettes, addiction. I'll do it when it's right for me.
Yeah.
And the fact that when you're in a relationship together, I think sometimes you need to compromise and find the best way of working to be together.
Did you ever smoke?
Long time ago, yeah.
Did you just like, were you addicted to cigarettes?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to give them up.
Like. No, but she says he's quite irritable. He's only off them a week. No wonder he's like a rat bag, probably.
Yeah.
It's not only a week because I'm trying to.
Yeah.
And you know, don't worry, he'll be back on them by Easter Sunday. That's just giving up something for Lent. That's not real. We've all done that.
No, I think you're absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. I think that the triggering element of this is probably like the main problem here. What I'm interested in is, she said the boyfriend decided to give up cigarettes for Lent. So is he only giving them up for Lent?
Yeah,
in which case,
maybe with a view too.
Yeah, I hope he gives, like, if he manages to stay off them for whatever Lent is, 40 days and 40 nights or whatever, well then, that he stays off them.
It's the best process. The best thing ever is to have a short-term plan for doing it, because when it becomes a habit, then nobody goes back onto cigarettes after they quit them successfully. Well, they do, but I mean, you know.
Yeah. But it's honestly, as somebody...
they do, actually, sorry.
You know, I gave up cigarettes in my 30s, and it was one of the hardest given ups I ever had to do, because you smoke so often in the day when you're addicted to them. I mean, I was smoking 25 to 30 cigarettes a day. And so, so you're first thing in the morning you were smoking, you know, every half an hour you were smoking. So when you give it up, it's really, really hard because you do it so often. So, you know, as you say, it's one of the things is you do get fierce cranky. Of course you do.
Mm.
What I don't understand is if this is your boyfriend, and if, as a rational person, which I would assume she is, she knows that for him to give up cigarettes, that's good for him in the long term. It's good for his health. I don't know why she can't be a little bit more supportive. She doesn't have to give up cigarettes herself, but certainly if somebody is giving up smoking in particular, because you've got all the visual, but you've also got the smell thing that triggers you as well. Surely she's not going to smoke around him. Do you know what I mean?
Well, like, you think that, but
I would say that the opposite is the case. I think when people feel triggered by somebody else doing something,
they kind of entrench, not more,
but they're just going to.
But that's not very supportive.
Well,
she has to, like, again, it's all changed since back in the day when I was smoking and you smoked indoors everywhere and you smoked on transport.
That was the point I was going
to
make.
And you smoked everywhere. But, like, surely she has to go outside to have a cigarette, or is she smoking in the house because they both used to smoke? I just feel she's being a bit mean.
Yeah.
If you think about what, as a society, we agreed to do by legislating for smoking areas was to support people, you know, to have a smoke-free zone to be in.
Yeah.
And also it's part of the process of helping people to quit. It's to kind of create, you know, you're not allowed to smoke here. Look, at the end of the day, I think this is about shared futures together. If she's not willing to see that this is something that's going to be good for both of them, regardless of whether she wants to make the change now.
She doesn't have to give up. But I just don't know why she just doesn't curtail her smoking around him.
But that,
I mean,
that
I don't think
the same thing.
She says, should I be doing it alongside him? Well, yeah, for your health, you probably should be. But if you're going to not give up cigarettes and you're happy to smoke, knowing that... And as I often say to people, you know, you get away with it until you stop getting away with it. And at some stage, it'll catch up on you. If that you're still happy to keep going, fine. But just don't do it in front of him and be a bit tolerant of the fact that he is grumpy, because it is a very difficult thing to do. And you should be supportive of that. It's better for his health. So I don't really totally understand.
Secretly, she doesn't want him to give up the cigarettes.
Yeah.
Should he have mentioned this beforehand when he was, you know, in the run up to Lent? Shouldn't he have said to her, shall we give up cigarettes?
I have a feeling he probably did.
He was off them 2 days and then he's going, why didn't you give him up?
Oh, no, I'd say he possibly did and she said no, and now he's cranky and now she's realising that. But I think behind it, as Declan said, I think she's quite triggered and she's thinking, yeah, I probably should give up cigarettes. And you know what really annoyed me was the fact that they're saving for a mortgage. I mean, I don't know how much cigarettes are now, but I know they're not cheap.
$8 million.
Oh,
bucks.
No. As Eugene says, if he's off them for a week, he has the deposit for the mortgage already.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, one last quick one. I was happily married for many years and had a truly loving relationship. We were best friends. We had a strong partnership. We also had a great sex life. Sadly, my husband passed away 4 years ago from cancer, and losing him was devastating. Over time, I've worked through my grief. I now feel ready to meet someone new. I don't want casual things. I miss companionship, affection, laughter, and that feeling of being chosen. I also miss physical intimacy. I'm 60, but still a woman with needs. I don't think that should be shameful. The problem is, I'm finding the modern dating world incredibly hard to navigate. It feels like everything revolves around apps, mixed signals, and men disappearing without explanation. I've had men who seem genuinely interested, only to ghost me. Others are very clear they only want one thing, and it's not a relationship. I had a wonderful marriage, so I know what a healthy, loving partnership looks like. Now I'm wondering if my expectations are outdated, or if I'm just looking in the wrong places. Is it unrealistic to hope for both love and a fulfilling sex life at this stage of my life? And how do I navigate today without losing heart?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I mean, and this again has come up here on this slot before. But as somebody also in their 60s, I have absolutely no clue how dating works nowadays. I'm absolutely foggalized. And I say that as somebody with adult kids. I still don't understand the rules of engagement.
You take a ticket and you wait for your number to be called.
Yeah, and then you're going out and you're not going out. So there's all of that kind of nonsense. And then add into that the whole thing of online dating and apps and all the rest of it, which I know can work for some people. And there's many young people who've met their partners that way. And I've no issue with that. But I think certainly for somebody of my age and her age, like that seems like quite a clunky kind of way to go around it. And I mean, you know, I think that there's nothing shameful in her wanting to have a meaningful relationship. That's also a physical relationship. Your age has absolutely nothing to do with that. And I don't think it's unrealistic for her to look to want to have both love and a fulfilling sex life, as she says. My advice, for what it's worth, is probably because one of the things I think, regardless of whether you're on your own or whether you're still with your partner, I think as you get into your 60s, one of the really important things you need to learn to do is to do things on your own. You know, be prepared. If there's something you want to do and he or she is not around to do it or whatever, do it on your own. Mm-hmm. Because the sooner you get used to doing stuff on your own, the better. One of you is going to end up on your own. So the sooner you learn to go and do things on your own, I think that's really important. And I often feel that for women in particular of that age, that stops them going out and doing stuff. You know, like I've nobody to do it with. My friends are busy or they are still have their partners. And so now I'm on my own. Because I think the way to meet people is probably just to get out there, you know, socialize, mm-hmm. go to events, go to the theater, go to the cinema, you know, go to things, get involved in things locally that you are interested in. And I think then, and I say this as somebody with no experience, then you might be more likely to meet somebody who fits what you're looking for, which you mentioned companionship and affection and laughter, as well as the physical side of a relationship. So I think using apps is probably great if you're looking for a quick ride. But other than that, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with that, but I do think the one thing I did want to say to this person is that I read her letter and I thought, this is somebody who knows himself. And I think that is something that comes with age.
Yeah.
And as people get older, the one advantage people have of being older is that they kind of know what it is they want and what they're willing to do and what they're not willing to do and where they're willing to go and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, the reverse problem that comes with that is you're going to meet guys who are, you know, they're only going to do what they want to do. And that's, you know, when you're younger, there's the kind of the whole life ahead of you and family and all that kind of stuff that kind of force people to compromise a lot more. When you're older, you're probably less willing to make those kind of compromises, and that's a good thing in many ways.
It is.
But part of knowing who you are means that you kind of know what you're interested in, and therefore having a connection with somebody is going to revolve around shared interests. And that's where your piece of advice specifically comes in to play, like going to places where the conversation is going to be about stuff that they like. I like golf. I'm going to meet a golfer. I like art. I'm going to go to the gallery. I like cinema. I'm going to join a film club. Whatever it is, that's the thing to do. And yes, by yourself. Yes, but go by yourself. That's how you meet people. You're with somebody, they're going to think you're coupled up.
But it's very difficult for women, particularly in their 60s, to do that because they've probably been married since they were very young and they've always done things as part of a couple or with their friends.
Yeah.
It's scary for women anyway to go out places on their own, but I think as you get older, it gets more scary. But what I'm saying is, it's always worth it.
And if going back in your apps thing, I think that the app is a tool to doing it. If that's not the right tool for you, fine. But you don't only need tools on the app.
Boom, boom. You will. Boom, boom. Two quick comments on the giving up smoking. One person has no sympathy. OMG, how pathetic is he? Can he not make an independent decision and follow up on it? Such a man complaint. My girlfriend won't give up cigarettes with me. Boo hoo.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
And Ed says, when an ex of mine gave up smoking, I was initially very supportive, but she became so irritable and difficult while she was off them that I started leaving packs of cigarettes around the place and hoping she'd go back.
May God forgive you. That's desperate.
Tobacco lobby there. Oh, my God.
And somebody says, asking for a friend, but can Barbara recommend any particular app for a quick ride?
No, she definitely can't, but I bet Declan could.
I bet you Declan can. I tell you what.
Not a quick one, a good one.
A good one. Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.